And when you study your anatomy and physiology, which muscle is like a spring? Good. Interesting, Pino. So the pure in Noah see God?
The what?
The pure in the Noah see God?
The pure in the Noah?
In the nose.
Oh. Say that again.
The pure in the nose see God? Hmm? Oh, the pure in heart sees God. Interesting, yeah? They use organs of the body. They didn't, you know, that, if they were saying any other thing, we would be lost in our search for the reality of what we are. And the ancient men were scientists, but they did not use the language that we are familiar today that frees us from guilt. They use a language which we call the agricultural language of the time frame to describe the laws of physics, but it embodied the sense of guilt in it, feeling incompetent and miserable in the process. It's all right. You had to use it to evolve. But now today, those same laws can be restated in a terminology that frees us from the guilt, but enforces commitment to action. So the sense of responsibility is heightened instead of the sense of guilt. So we are looking now at a mechanical language or technical language that frees us from the guilt but makes us more responsible. The guilt would be like being a passenger. The commitment would be like the driver behind the wheel. So the more you assume the conscious responsibility of your mechanism, you drop off the who you are and focus on the what you are. Then the God emerges from within you as a centered principle, not as somebody sitting on a throne outside to which you may perpetuate in the who of you. But when you track it down, the who lets you down. Only the what sustains you. There is no God sitting on a throne waiting for any what, let alone any who. You are God, because God has become you and provides you the opportunity of a individuality called a who. Yeah.
You just brought up another question. We always refer to as the heart, as you say, the pure part, and it's the seed of our, of our beingness, so to speak. How does that relate with the spring? This is fascinating to me, the fact that this business of the spring as being the heart. But how do we get that connotation, or how does the position of the heart in the body? It's not an endocrine gland, and it's pumping our vital fluids.
A spring has the ability to pull both ways, not one way.
Okay.
The heart is the only organ designed to do what?
Contract and expand.
Good.
That
so that is the reason why the principle is locked into the heart. No other organ has that particular capability. So as a spring is a principle that could pull forward and pull back on its own, the same function is built into it. And you didn't add anything to the wire.
No.
You notice? All you did to the wire was what?
Change shape.
But it is in the geometrical reaction of the function of the mass that determines the uniqueness of the mass. So when Spinoza said God geometrizes, what was he really confirming?
Spring.
Right. He was confirming the principle of the spring carry the uniqueness of Alpha Omega, begin and perpetuation. No other function of geometry could do that. Therefore, early men referred to God in all type of labels, but when we came to the American Indian, his version of God was what? Great Spirit. Then they give him all kind of labels. But there is no other ethnic group on the planet that we know of referring to God as Spirit. We don't refer to many other labels. The Hindus refer to it as breath life. Brahma, Brahm, the supreme breath. But that again didn't give sufficient insight to the mechanics. Spirit gave insight to its true mechanics, because we can integrate a piece of device to match that label. Whereas in breath, inhaling and exhalation, we don't have any device other than a pump, a suction pump, as a device to indicate that particular phenomenon. So, yet a spring could be a tangible object to look at out of one piece of wire, put into another geometrical expression, performing an intrinsic kinetic force. This is unique as a term to identify it. And then when you look at your mechanism, to early man trying to pinpoint that particular phenomena, he came up with the heart. And then they said the life is in the blood. Well, what is the life that's in the blood? Only the oxygen that cleans out the carbon dioxide in the blood that makes it functional for consciousness. So the more you become aware of what you are, you lock in on the physics for the first time, then the sense of participation is your health, is your creative consciousness, is your freedom. Is everybody here?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's see the movie.
Okay, we're going to ask some people to move around, because we're going to move it down his chair over here.
Okay. It takes 3 polarities or 328 days to synchronize all of that. So it's 90 days, 90 days.
Ben, the other day you were mentioning that the Russian, they got it down to 4.5 months.
What they have done is dilate the size of the fetus to twice the ratio to release the pressure from the mother's body in terms of carrying it that long length of time, so it can be brought out of the body in a shorter space of time. So all they're doing is shortening the carrying time in reference to the dilation size. That's all they're doing. The 9 months in dilation is a certain size to a certain weight for a certain duration. So the mother will have that particular immune level set up to operate from that length of time. All the Russians have done in increasing the size of the dilation of the fetus to half the time ratio in the carrying weight to relieve the mother from the long period of having to carry that weight.
So in other words, instead of 90-90-90, it's 45 cycle.
Yeah, but you're doubling the dilation.
What is it?
The size of this object carried for 9 months would be exactly this size at 9 months. Now, in 4.5 months, the size would be doubling itself in 4.5 months. That's what they're doing. If the child weighs an ounce in 1 month and a pung at the end of the 2 months, at the end of 3 months, it weighs 4 pounds. At the end of 9 months, if we have 7 pounds, that is how long it will take for the child to be 7 pounds. Mm-hmm. What they're going to do is this. In 4.5 months, this child is going to weigh 7 pounds and ready to come out.
Because it hurt the child?
No, it doesn't hurt the child. Dilation of the tissue to the ratio of the time frame is a shortcut method to the pregnancy level.
Is it healthier for the mother? I take it that it's healthier for the mother than because of the weight.
Well, the mother isn't going to be stressed out because if she's taken 9 months to carry 7 pounds, her body will take 18 years to recuperate the stretch marks for carrying that 7 pound baby for 9 months.
Say that again.
Does it change the weight of the baby? The bigger the baby, the more the stress?
The longer she carries the baby, the more the stretch process and deterioration of the cells are retained.
Well, what? Why does that happen? I mean, I had a 9.5 pound baby that was 3 weeks late. Why does that happen? Child resisting being born, or is the mother holding on?
No. All they're trying to do is to cut down the time frame of carrying the child within a certain weight to the disintegration of the cells of the mother. The mother cells break down in ratio of weight and length of time of carrying a fetus. So what is the asset of having a child then? If our recuperative qualities of our body will shorten. So she doesn't have recuperative qualities of the cells carrying a fetus that long with that weight. The recuperative qualities are shutting down. That's the reason why they try to shorten the time frame by dilating the fetus in order to benefit from the recuperative condition of the cells in a woman's body.
But Donna, I can almost always be in a chart a child whose birth has been induced or altered in any way. It changes drastically the child that's been born. Their timing is off.
They're not concerned with that. What the Russians have done in the last 3 years is to reduce the length of time of 9 months for a woman to carry a fetus of a minimum of 7 pounds versus a recuperative reaction of the cell of 18 years loss. The question came up, how can we reduce the recuperative time, the lost time, in the mother's body to carrying a child 7 pounds in 9 months? And that was the research went on in the last 15 years. They finally came up that they could do what Mr. Luther Burbank did with his walnut, cutting the eating time down, but he couldn't cut the growing time of a tree to bear a limb strong enough to make a beam or a cabinet. All he did was cut down the eating time of the nut. All the Russians have done is cut down the carrying time of a fetus by dilating it, double its size in half the time frame.
How did they dilate?
They put in an enzyme process. And therefore, instead of having 80 years recuperative loss in the cellular structure, the recuperative loss is only 9 years. So it takes 80 years for those cells to rebuild back their recuperative qualities of having to carry a 7 pound baby for 9 months. They're cutting down the recuperative loss for half the time so that the woman's health is extended in terms of recuperation.
So that baby is 7 pounds at 4.5 months.
A 7 pounds, yes, at 4.5 months, but that has nothing to do with the recuperative loss. That would have been 18 years in the mother if it was 9 months. The recuperative loss now is shortened for the mother.
Don't you suppose they'll probably wind up shortening it even more? Maybe they can get it down to ready-made.
Test tube
against the baby.
So it's 18 years for each year.
The carbon-based body is the only body that requires the uterine canal for the purpose of the viciousness to be released out of this mechanism and the chances of being aborted and never finish it. Other body types like silicon, sulfur, and methane don't use the uterine canal. They have a direct materialization of the genes and form it by the will. That's why your space brothers don't have children via the uterine canal. And those who are trying to use human beings as biological telephone booths don't want to take the uterine canal, knowing they may be aborted by their so-called parent. So when you hear these fellows who talk on TV as channeling, they're using carbon-based bodies as biological telephone booths to impress us with futuristic conceptual awareness, to make the person who is the telephone booth have some kind of a financial position. But they can't stay in that carbon-based body. They gotta get out. They can only come in and go out every so often and talk through it. And what will they talk about? Next year, what's going to happen? They can't even tell us how to live now. Not one of them can tell you how to live now. But they use that person's body to talk to a group of people who are looking for something for nothing. Let that entity that is claiming what it is take the journey through the uterine canal of a carbon-based body and all its so-called heroic courageous nature would freak out, because it knows it may not make it. That mother or father may decide to abort or have a miscarriage. Then that he is stuck or she is stuck in carbon-based cycles for the rest of the creative cycle. But where they are in their particular cycle, they can merge back and be instantaneous, another form like that. But they can't resolve the problem because those other body forms do not provide cellular permanency. Only the carbon-based form provides cellular permanency. We who are in it are the most vicious of them all that came out of that time frame into this time frame to have it. But we don't understand it, we lose it. When we understand it, we got the greatest thing going, because the envious don't think that space brothers looking at us love you. They envy you for having this type of body, not for your possessions on the earth. Our possession on the earth is peanuts to them. They don't want that. What they want is this type of body in order to make the transition of their thought processes into it, so that they can have the permanency of the carbon-based body with a high intellectual development in it. They don't need our automobiles or trains or stuff like that. They don't even need the food we eat. But what they need is this type of frame that is set by nature to establish cellular permanency and to materialize and dematerialize at will without breaking down. They can materialize and dematerialize at will, but they'll break down. And they know it. That glass is made of silicon. It's transparent. Light will pass through it. That mirror will reflect. Get up. a diamond and see which one of the two is going to hold up in strength. The diamond will cut that to pieces. And the diamond is made from carbon. And it's the lousiest crystal in the universe. Because it got to go through blocking light and transform right up to diamond by heat and pressure. Therefore, it takes more pain to be endured in the individualistic nature of the structure to warrant the highest possible reality in the universe. And therefore, Brother Jesus knew it and never fought it. He welcomed crucifixion. But every time you sedate this body, trying to avoid the pain syndrome, you acquire immunity deficiency. Every time you welcome the pain syndrome, you acquire immunity efficiency. That's why the martial artists don't fear pain, and they don't have to feel the struggle of avoiding it to break down the body. The body will rebuild itself, but women in certain parts of the world and research scientists are trying to give some type of a sedation way to the body by cutting down the time frame from 9 months to 4.5 months, so that the woman's body will look more beautiful and last longer. Remember this much. We are entitled to our individuality, to perform every form of brutality. Simply because individuality cannot be revoked by God. It can only be compensated by making mistakes, correcting the mistakes to warrant compassion. It's a very lousy game, but there is no better game. Creative intelligence to make something like that. In your silicon body, you wouldn't sit down in this room. You would design any shape you wanted of your body, in your silicon body. You wouldn't have to feel distraught over tomorrow's dinner. You wouldn't feel restricted to an area in traveling, but you have one fear in a silicon or methane or sulfur body. It's not permanent, but it'll last a heck of a long time.
Yeah, it's kind of funny just because that's probably a basic human fear as well.
We brought that fear with us from those body forms into this carbon-based body without knowing what the carbon-based body has to offer. And we needed models of those who achieved the journey through the carbon-based body to show why we have it. And unless we see these models, we would not know it, why we have a carbon-based body to resolve it. But the wars will go on between our heads, and the fears and the frustrations will go on, and the reduction of pain and anxiety will go on in many different ways, only to find out what this model carries the most subtle laws hidden that the others can't carry. This type, carbon based. All the other phenomena that you call miracles, they can perform by their own volition is already locked up in this one too. So, but we have to reactivate it, not by the something for nothing attitude. That's the reason why we're given this one over all the rest as the final test. We volunteer for this one. We're not drafted for this. This is a result of having gone through the others, felt trapped, and couldn't own anything, and therefore rebelled. And then to realize that you can't own anything in the universe, you can only take care of it. But then when using atomic principles, you clutter up the place with atomic refuse. So we have to volunteer to clean it up. And in order to clean it up, we have to take on a form as a compensatory condition. And the only form that is compensatory and the reward is in the form already. What reward would God give a silicon body if it never disobeyed? A silicon body is an angel to you. That's what they used to call them in those ancient agricultural language. Angels that move through time and space. They're the silicon body. But what compensation does it need? It doesn't need any compensation. Which angel will last permanent? They envy you. Even if you look at it in the agricultural language, with the silicon body acting as an angel, flittering through the universe, will envy you, the carbon-based body. That's why they say they made man a little less than the angel. That was the way they used to write it in those days. An angel, supposedly, agricultural language, is a silicon body. Man, a little less than the angel, is a carbon-based body. The angel, silicon, light passes right through. Carbon, the light can't pass through in the first stages because it's like a charcoal. It's like a graphite. And finally, if it makes it a diamond, then the angel envy you. Can the angel be stronger than Brother Jesus after he went through the cross? But the angel could be strong up to a certain level. But then when you go through the extreme pain, you pass the angel in the transition. But the two forms are already set up already. The one who's in a silicon body can perform all kind of so-called psychic phenomena or miraculous actions. But it knows that its mechanism will decompose, break down. It knows it can last longer than normal. It's not subjected to the short period of lifespans, but it will still break down. The carbon base does know what it has. It takes pain and suffering to bring out the best out of the carbon. It takes frustration and committed action to bring out the quality of the carbon-based body. So all the something-for-nothing attitudes are phased out in the carbon-based body to produce the highest quality in it. And no sooner it achieves that state of awareness where the something-for-nothing is cleaned out, it can impose any condition it wants to look like. And that's why they say many of the realized masters, when they realize themselves, make themselves look like 18 and 20-year-old kids. Yukteswar looked like a 60-year-old man. He didn't want to change back his face or his blood, but it doesn't break down. It's there for you. It's permanent. And so we have it. We don't know it. We aren't being told of it directly, simply because those who came to talk of it are only talking in agricultural language. But if the time is running out, really, agricultural language is no longer sufficient to tell us why we are here or what we are.
A lot of them, the language, the guilt part, is a part of a lot of the pain that we've got to go through to resolve that.
Yeah. But you see, we have to evolve through that in order to appreciate what we've got. And if we didn't evolve through it, we wouldn't be able to appreciate what we have. So anytime you're running from pain or anguish or frustration, thinking it's the best solution, isn't always what it is. It's when you affirm from your point of reference, what is the highest good for me, let it manifest, then live it.
So again, is that a stance of patience? I have a hard time knowing where activity fits into that. If you're to relieve, if you don't seek necessarily to relieve the situation that is painful, I don't know. I mean, are you supposed to welcome that and it's just confusing.
Doesn't the growth process finding your way out of the pain situation?
Yeah. Or if you recognize it, is it as something that, I mean, part of the pain and anguish it comes from your own ignorance, doesn't it?
Resistance.
Are you afraid of the pain, or are you afraid of feeling stupid? Which of the two is it that's really bugging us? That is what we have to concern ourselves with. Feeling ignorant, or feeling the pain. Which is it of the two makes you feel miserable? You can be healthy and ignorant, you can feel no pain. You can be sick and be ignorant and you'll feel pain. But pain is a necessary ingredient for your immunity. So which of the two really creates the anguish, the pain or the ignorance?
So the pain is, it's just like the body system. It's just like your nervous system, because it's warning you of something that is harmful to your body.
We just saw a movie just now. Where is the biggest pain to the sperm? Staying in the daddy or being thrown out in the mother?
The anguish. Thrown out.
They were healthy, weren't they?
Yeah.
And yet when you look at the, when they were thrown out, how many were healthy and how many were malformed and still healthy?
20%.
Then those 20%, were they in pain because they were malformed?
Probably.
That's the question. Even the father doesn't know he got malformed sperms. Well, he knows he's got what? You know, he got sperm, right, good, exactly. The sperm individualistically release the goat to the ovum and can't turn around and go back. Which one of them was asked to go out? Which one was asked to stay home? You know, see, this is where your real issue comes into your cellular mechanism, where pain originates. Where anguish originates, where competition originates, where survival originates. And therefore, when we think we are knocking down our environmental conditions to avoid situations, we don't look at the real facts. The real fact is you're in the father and you're thrown out without your consent. Yet the sperm innately knows it cannot turn around and go back. And yet it knows if it doesn't work towards the ovum, it will phase out. Is the journey a vicious journey or a cooperative journey? Does the journey start out with being vicious and end up cooperative? Or does it start out cooperative and end up vicious, or start with cooperative and then a cooperative?
Vicious and then cooperative.
Good. And
or
so
it almost seems simultaneous in a lot of ways. That there were the protecting cells beforehand, and you know, they go in. In certain instances, they're working as a pack to get them.
But they don't start out.
So it seems like
it's every man for himself.
No.
They get into the
behavior qualities that you can imagine you're capable of exist right there. No greater love than he would lay down his life for his fellow man is right there. And son of a gun, Cain will kill Abel to get through first. And see, every criminal act that you can think of in your environment is present right there. Because where is the criminal act came from? It came from the original manifestation of man as a silicon form, a methane and a sulfur, with the prime motivation of individuality. And this individuality cannot be revoked. That's the whole principle behind it. And so when man was created out of the unified field, given the freedom of the individuality, with the motivation to go forth, multiply, that is, reproduce himself, and have dominion. The word dominion makes all the difference why the process is continuing to be with us, and have dominion over the universe. A universe is set up here for the manifested form to live in it. Dominion means regulate it, but dominion don't mean own it. And we find out if we have the ability to materialize any object by the power of the speech in order to satisfy a need, two things come up as a threat in that principle. One, what do you do with the residue? To who cares for anything, because there's nothing there to care for in the first place. You didn't put it there. Why care for it? You ever think of that? Everything is set up here. Trees are growing. Beautiful. All the things are there. You are hungry? Do you go plant a tree? What are you going to say? Apple! Then where did I throw the residue? Don't throw it in my spot. Pear. Avocado. I got a big stone. We're gonna throw it.
So coping becomes
when you talk about coping, it doesn't sound like much, but I have a thought, and I'm not sure I can verbalize it. If coping would become what we're resolving is what God didn't resolve, or what the original imaginative force of creation didn't resolve, which is this residue, and that's what coping becomes.
What is our biggest problem on planet Earth today?
Environmental
residue, right? Don't drop your garbage, fill it Pennsylvania on Tucson, right?
So on the large scale, that's what coping becomes, and then would it become almost the imaginative, where we become the imaginative process?
Yes, the thing is, the prior body forms had no need to plant or take care of its ecology, because it had the capacity to crystallize its thought form, and that is a dominion over the environment. Whatever it said, it crystallized. We call that miraculous capability, extrasensory capability, and everything. These are the fancy names to describe what is an inheritance endowed to the spoken voice. Now, all the laws of physics would adhere to the spoken voice, but it doesn't adhere to residue. Now, out of that condition, man, in his present form, realized that he is at a handicap. Though he could crystallize anything at will that he wanted, he can't make any new thing. Even Brother Jesus showed he can't make any new thing. He can only Xerox what is there without the effort of planting it or go pick it. That's a Xeroxing principle of dominion over the environment. Now, the residue becomes the anguish of that individual. Then the next anguish is he cannot own a single thing that he looks around. Then the anguish begins to deepen. Since he can't own, and he can't throw the residue any place without creating issue with each other, the individuality began to split between the adherence to cooperation or searching for a possessive position to represent itself. So they say Lucifer appeared on the scene, one of the sons of God, and he started the argument among them, which is only a big fat ego. The ego, in its individualistic nature, cannot accept non-possession as an ideal way for existing. So the ego strives to possess via attachment. And there came the very first real anguish. Possession is 9/10 of the law. Wherever you settle and how long you stay there gives you the right to claim it permanently. That is the egotistical drive in all life forms, right up to the carbon based form. We brought that particular fear that we can't have anything. And innately, that fear is there in the carbon based body, silicon body, methane body, and sulfur body. From what level? But all of them become unconscious and they sleep. and that makes them all vulnerable to possession and attachment. Now, Silicon Man slept and realized he was vulnerable. Methane Man slept and realized he was vulnerable. Sulfur Man slept and realized he was vulnerable. And he realized that there is nothing he can own. Within that vulnerability, he is a victim to his own fear. Therefore, out of that carbon-based body was given, after they fought among themselves, between the point of ownership to the point of directorship. They fought among themselves for it. And that's why Buddhism emerged as a religion years after in the carbon-based body, pointing out the main issue in all life forms as the only, not sin, this transgression against the spirit, that's what they call it. In Buddhism it's called the only transgression against the spirit. What is that transgression against this? But is looking for the opportunity to be involved in the now. And being involved in the now, this is what they call loving the Lord thy God with all of your mind. You're not looking for sleep because it will take care of itself. Your body sleeps and wakes on its own momentum if you watch it. But when you determine that you have to sleep versus you have to stay awake, those momentums will put you in sleep state or the wake state to fit the need. But if you're observing it, all that tiredness. Did you sleep? That your tiredness seemed to have left you all of a sudden, right? Where did it go? We were talking for an hour or so before, feeling drowsy. Where has your tiredness gone?
We felt so wonderful when we did the Equiswell
at 3 a.m. That's the essence, my dear sister. Is that you have it in you already. All you gotta do is lock into it. It is your control over the immune system on a conscious level. And that's what they call brain interaction with your endorphin patterns. Before, we never could relate to the thing in the terminology that would make us confident of it. It was always a little nebulous. All right, that's fine. But now that we know what we're doing, it's not something that we are going to shut out or try to reach. It's something you got to be conscious of. You have the principle inside of you.
See, that's how you perceive it. Yeah. See what clarity happened when you just made that example. Before I thought, oh, I have to wait for my astrological something or another. Sometime out there, I'm going to get it. And now I'm understanding it.
You see, the thing is, I'm showing you to be consciously aware of it. Let us consciously feel the Equiflow. Come on. Feel it. Be conscious of it. It's there. Recognize it. And observe how the drowsiness and all the so-called residual carbon dioxide phases out of the cells. It's a form of cellular oxygenation apart from your nostril. Your nostril brings in oxygen, yes, but Equiflow is from head to toe, so it's a bio-oxygenation process also. Because the tingling feeling is the conscious identification with individuality and your universality. And you can't be separated when you're conscious. You can't be tired when you're conscious. You are living vitality. But the fixation of what you got to do next could tire you out. Versus the appreciation of what you are now would not tire you out. Do you see how subtle and how simple that thing is? That gives you the control between the accelerator and the brake.
Yeah.
It's the word is the accelerator or the brake. Now you talk about doing it, you put the brakes on. Now you quit the talk and feel it, you put the accelerator on. That's what we call a talk shift. You innately or unknowingly shut the thing off by talking and putting the brakes on. And if you don't say anything and just feel, you put in the accelerator on. And all the masters, even Sai Baba, he's there, what does he do? Is that he said, he's living the thing. He's telling you, he's there. And making the people around, but they don't sense it because why? They didn't spend the time to get down into it. Once you spend the time to get down into it, you realize that those people who have mastered it truly have the greatest knowledge to offer all of us. Get into yourself. Get into yourselves. Learn to appreciate yourselves for what they actually are, because they will teach you and sustain you. But you can't teach them. You can only turn the brakes on with your mouth, telling you what it's going to do. Your own words act as brakes on them. But then if you don't use words to talk to it and just sense it and feel it, you're accelerating. And that's what energy is. Energy is equal to the mass times the velocity of light squared. It's the conscious identifying is the acceleration of the light principle in you. If you talk, you shut it down. If you feel and identify, it pushes out the carbon dioxide, it moves through the ears where it's tight, and all those ears start to get flexible again. Are you feeling sleepy or awake? Isn't that interesting? If your eyes were burning a few seconds ago, how do they feel now? Clear, right? That's what it's supposed to do. It's automatic conscious cell rejuvenation. That's why they call it rejuvenation. Conscious rejuvenation or samadhi or God realization. All these nice fancy words until you begin to work with it. It's not that mundane. It's very dynamic. But you have to come to grips with its intrinsic simplicity before you can see its cosmic totality working through you. If you look around in nature, anything that will function to be what it is, it has to function on an equal rhythm. Otherwise it collapses. Equally true in your body, for you to function without shutting down or going into so-called suspended states of lapse of awareness, the equiflow keeps you conscious all the time. But when you shift away from it, then you begin to have what? Too soon, too late. Too soon, too late, you're going to end up tired or frustrated. When you're equiflowing, you're alert and you're ready to work. But the work is only whatever is needed to be done. The world moves towards you instead of you moving out to what? Brother Jesus didn't go out to heal the people. They finally came to him. Because why? He was centering himself in an equiflow state, knowing fully well that what he has to offer is a way to live in order to perform service without feeling frustrated or tired. So it's called unconditioned, tireless service.
Most people work now.
Goal-oriented, yeah. To the result. And if you're working towards the service end of performing action for the benefit of those around, it takes care of itself. That's the highest goal there is, the selfless action of it. Where you get more fun Is it for the cause of the dollar you're going to get, or is it the joy of creating while you're doing it? The joy of doing more and more new ideas with the thing is the fun. You'll always get money for what you do. Well, can you get the fun of improving upon what you do? That's where we all are striving for and don't realize it. We're all striving to keep improving, to express ourselves better. But we don't always get the chance to do it, and so we get locked into the end result of compensating with it. And if you don't look at that part, the creative end starts opening up because it's like a vacuum. Nature abhors a vacuum. If you focus on the payment end of it, the creative end shuts down. If you focus on the opportunity of expressing creativity, the other one opens. So there's the essence of the realization. You function from within your nature, knowing fully well that you're identified from your individualistic self to your collective self for the purpose of oneness, to serve, love. But you got to breed. I love the young man, but if I don't breed, I can't even sit down here to talk to you guys. See what I mean? So this is a respect for the breath. Not that I'm going to make the breath the issue, but I have to respect which comes first. The key got to go in the ignition or open the door of the car before I can get in the car. Now, if I left the car in drive, could I turn the ignition on? I may not even come back and find a car. It might roll down the road and get smashed up because, what, in the wrong gear, right? Some little bump on something in the car, and so that's the problem. And these are the things you're looking at about yourself.
I have kind of an unrelated question. How come the baby in the womb had plugged up nostrils? They just real briefly mentioned that there were two plugs and they hadn't found the reason for that yet.
If we do not breathe through our nostrils while we're in the womb, we can only breathe after the cord is cut through the nostrils, putting us in the first position of individuality. You're not an individual while you're in the womb. You're an extended, overgrown tumor of the mother called fetus in the womb. That water or fluid that is going through the mouth and keeping it functioning has the oxygen from the mother, dilating it and functioning. It's not a nostril process. It's a osculation process of flushing. So this is when people come to grips to the reality, are you a human being or not? You're not a human being until the cord is cut. You're an extension of your mother and your dad in the womb, but you're not an individual to yourself responsible for any function. Now, when that cord has got this, has to be locked up, otherwise you'll drown in your own fluid, and you'll be dead. Right. And so when it comes out, it's flushed out, and the cord is cut, and then the air has to go in and activate you, and then you have to synchronize with the air, which is called respiration. And if you do synchronize on time, they keep you. If you don't synchronize on time, they will use backup systems to try to get it on time. And if that doesn't work, it's the end of the process. They know they didn't make it. Now, they didn't go further enough into the process, which I would like to see them do, was when they take the baby out of the womb, before they cut the cord, weigh it. And then when they cut it and that area of the nostril was opened up, reweigh it and show the differential of the two weight principle, making it an individual to itself.
It gets heavier?
Yes. It weighs 3.5 ounces more. And before you quit this frame, they weigh you. And when you stop breathing, you're 3.5 ounces less.
Didn't now, the baby, though, already breathe before the cord was cut, after they cleaned the nostrils out and the breath?
They didn't breathe on his own yet. You got to cut that cord.
What was the
pressurization of the cord is still maintaining the functioning within the nostril. But it's not breathing on its own. When it's breathing on its own, the cord has to be cut to give it total disengagement, total individuality, and then the lungs have to interact on its own, otherwise it'll shut down.
So the cord is still oscillating?
Yeah, the cord is still oscillating, right.
And
so
even though the nostrils are cleared out, and it appears to be breathing on its own.
But it ain't.
But it's not.
Not until that cord is cut.
So it has nothing to do with the breath of what you're seeing.
But it was in solution, it was in I forget what you call the sac.
Yeah, the embryonic sac.
And that was full of fluid. So the sac was broke, and when it came out, the plug was still there, but he wasn't in water anymore. So they flushed out the plugs, took whatever it was, and then he prepared to breathe.
Already breathing.
No.
Through the
they clean the nostril,
right.
Getting it prepared for when they cut the cord so the air will go in. It isn't using its nostrils. There's no way you can have devices here, lots of it. I've had to work with it myself. Yeah. You don't breathe through your lungs until the cord is cut.
So
you clean the nostrils after you take the child out of the womb. Now, I've seen babies fall out of the mother right into my own toilet bowl. The woman came there with my ex-wife, grandson. And the girl came to see me, and she wanted to use the bathroom, and lo and behold, she let out a yell. I said, what happened? Did you hurt yourself? Her baby got birthed right in the toilet bowl. So we're going to take it out. It's not breathing through its nose. It's still connected to her. You had to clean it. Cut the cord, then it will breathe on its own. But if they have to prepare the nose for the air, clean the body, and then cut the cord, and then let it breathe on its own through the nostril. It will not breathe once it's connected to the nostril because the pressure will interact. But the nostrils have to be cleared for it to get the air to go in. But it's not breathing on its own. The lungs will not pump. Now, if the lungs don't pump after you cut the cord, within a given time, it'll get blue. And that means no oxygen is going in on its own. You'll have to hook it up to a device to pressurize it, or you'll have to get multi-mouth resuscitation.
So there's been some, bursts where the cord's not cut for 10 or 12 minutes, but the baby is out. It's crying, but it's not
breathing through its lungs. It's been
oscillating
back through the umbilical cord of the mother.
Okay. So that is not on its own.
That's
yet.
Not on its own yet. Okay. That is preparing it for the actual nasal breathing.
But it looks like when you're looking at it with the cord still attached, it looks like
it's not. It's not breathing through its lungs. It is dilating and constricting by an oscillating process. Through the connection of the umbilical cord to the mother. It's the mother's breath that is pushing the body of the baby to dilate and constrict via the fluid in the umbilical cord. But the baby is not doing this or that. It can't. There's no way. It has to cut here first before this can work.
So it's not breathing.
It's never breathing through its nostril. That's why the issue has always been you're not a human being until they cut the cord. They have tried for years to, but they can't because that's the issue over the thing. Nobody's a human being until the cord is cut. we may like to make you a human being, but you're attached to your mother. But nature has no way to make us fool ourselves, other than to accept ourselves. Your lungs will not take in air on its own if you are connected to the umbilical cord with your mother. The cord has to be cut definitely to take the pressure off. Then the air has to rush in the nostril that is cleared for it. This has to be taped off to take this. And then the air has to interact after it goes in there with the lungs. Now if it doesn't interact, it's like a carburetor. If it doesn't interact, it will shut down. The baby will get blue. And that tells us there is no oxygen interacting in the tissues. And once it doesn't interact, they'll try to put support systems or maybe through what is called compression action on the lung. But if it doesn't hold, that's it. But with the way compression equipment is made, they can hook you up now and get the body to work with the compression device to some length of time where it will take the air from the outside and synchronize. 9 times out of 10 they are lucky. 1 time out of 10 they're not. And they have gone to the extent where I've seen different fetuses, not babies born, 9 month baby, I've seen 3 month fetuses, 7 month fetuses, 8 month fetuses, all hooked up to a support system, feeding it to make it grow to its full 9 months to be able to breathe on its own. I've been up to the Hershey Hospital 2 years ago. The man who sells you your chocolate bar, you know, from Hershey, Pennsylvania, and a friend of mine, she's the nurse in charge, and she and Melissa, you know Melissa Wolf that come here, they both grew up together in the same school there in Pennsylvania. So she wanted me to go and see her friend because she just got married. And she took us into the hospital and she was telling Melissa that they're not trying to do research in acupuncture on the baby to see if they can get them to function. And she said, all her years as a nurse, they have never found a baby breathing through the nostril in the womb. And all they can do, they have devices now where the baby may not be able to stay in the womb and it's premature. They take it out and they hook it to these support devices that feeds it fluid. But it doesn't take oxygen into the nostril. It flows through the umbilical area and parts of the body, and then it grows. And we were looking at them. There were 8 of them in the area that at that hospital I went to the ward, you know, 8 in incubators. And from 3 months right up to 8.5 months, going to 9 months. And she was showing me how they are growing them. That was her work, to study, monitor, and record the growing process by the time they took it out and hook it up to the devices that it is growing. And she's keeping track, and I was looking at the chart and her notation, days and so, the growth pattern right up. And she told me that one of them, the 8.5 month baby, they took it out from the mother at 3 months. So how many months was it growing? 5.5 months, right? So the date when she saw, and it's another few more weeks, it will reach the full 9 months. Then she said it will be ready for disengaging, and then they have to reactivate it to breathe on its own nostril. So I asked her, Have you had any baby body that reached the full accomplishment? She said, yes, they've had three, but the parents don't claim them. Because why? They're already given up for what? As dead, unfinished fetuses. So they turn them over for adoption processes. But if the person who can't complete the pregnancy, they're calling this what is called a bypass process for finishing or incubation process to finish the birth. And so the parent of the child can pay for the continuation of the program to where the child may complete itself outside of the mother. So this is what they're trying to set up, as sort of a incubating equipment, so where the mother may not be able to finish the pregnancy in the womb, and it has to come out. They can save the baby and keep it growing in the incubating equipment right up to the 9 months, and then complete it and cut the breeding. But it will be their child, but it's finished outside in an incubating process.
Even if it started, all the debate that goes on about test tube babies, there really isn't that much of it. I mean, there's really nothing to it. There's just nothing to it. I mean, if it's the breath and they still come out and they still breathe and it's still going to develop a consciousness or not. I mean, the process is pretty much the same for the baby, whether it was conceived.
Oh, yeah.
Conceived in
another
womb.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have those little moral questions.
The birth process is different. What about the anguish and the viciousness of the actual birth process? Or is that all taking place from conception?
Chickens today don't need a hen to sit on the egg. Or hatch it. You can take the egg and put it in an incubator box at a certain temperature and turn it every 24 hours within a given length of time, and the chicken will pop out. This process has been going on for years in this country. The hen doesn't even know it's chicken. We are moving in that direction where human beings are donating the ovum and sperm for that type of incubation.
Of course, to donate that sperm, it's still got to go through a little bit of the anguish.
If we're looking for the production of a human mechanism in order to populate the planet, they've already accomplished this in the test tube baby. They've done it in the chicken already, so.
But what does that do to what Ginger was saying earlier in terms of the scope of the horror and things like that? You know, she was referring to children that had been induced. You know, then from that, it was children who were C-section. I mean, she didn't say that, but C-section, well, they didn't actually have to go through the canal, and now...
The greater the pain, the greater the person. No pain, a very weak person. If that is the avenue that particular consciousness needs to work through in order to demonstrate higher potential of immunity, at a later period in time, mm-hmm. then that's what it chose. Remember this. The things I do, you do also, and greater things shall you do. Which is the greatest thing that Jesus did? Hmm?
What's the greatest thing that Jesus did?
Mm-hmm.
Being born.
Mm-hmm. Good. And you answer your question, good. How do you get resurrection?
You go through the process.
Hmm?
You go through the process.
Of what?
Of carrying your own cross. And that's
true. Up to what point?
Finished.
Well, what was the finish experience? Can you describe the finish experience?
Overcoming death.
But how did he go through the? What kind of death did he had?
Painful.
Hmm? A very, very painful one. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm trying to point out. He's already telling you the things I do, you shall do also, and greater things. I'm going to go through death in a very painful way. You can do the same thing and let them nail you too. And greater things shall you do. Come out of the test tube, baby. Work your way through what? Do you think the role of a test tube, baby, is a worse pain level than nail on the cross?
I have no idea.
Good.
That's why I was asking the question.
The question is, pick any pain and live it. And the answer is, you will triumph if you don't panic.
But you were saying there will be a weaker person for me.
If you don't go through the pain.
Of birth?
Any kind of a pain, or birth, or before birth, or after birth. If you don't go through it, you will be a weak person. I fell off a building, broke up the body. I would have been a weak person if I refused to go through it. Mm. And I wouldn't be sitting here to talk to you because I'd have been born in another body. But because I prefer this familiar body, broken and everything, I decided to breathe back in it.
I understand that. Hear that. I'm still a little confused about the birth. As an example, I have three children. My first son was just, you know, born regularly.
Mm-hmm.
Normal. went through the birth canal. The second son, because of the doctor's wish, and I was just ignorant of the pain, I guess. They induced my son, who was born through the birth canal.
Mm-hmm.
It was a shorter birth,
mm-hmm.
but, and, you know, he came out
mm-hmm.
not really in his time.
Mm-hmm.
The third child,
mm-hmm.
Her father pushed the doctor to induce her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, it was not the doctor. He insisted that that happen at a certain time,
mm-hmm.
and then think there was complications. I mean,
mm-hmm.
so she was going through pain trying to get out,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't her time to come out,
mm-hmm.
and then they did a C-section.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that say? Just in the birth process, before we talk about what, you know, they've gone through or what they're going to go through in their life.
She's lucky. It could be worse. That was her cross, and therefore her immunity level is established at that ratio of pain, and therefore she will triumph with that immunity against the trials she has to face in the future. But to be worse than that is never to have the chance to come out.
Or to have died in the process because of inducing him.
It doesn't matter how the person come through. Don't look at the limitations of the methods or the conditions of the painful process. Always look at the immunity level accomplishing survival over it all. Survival is the determining factor of increasing the immunity. As long as she survives the process, her immunity has increased. And wherever she will be in the future to face herself, it may be often painful, maybe never reinforced or point out to her that she had mastered all these things and don't panic
mm-hmm.
or be destructive, she will demonstrate greater qualities. These are the things you have to point out to the person. Why they are in that level and why they've got that, it's because they have demonstrated that they have this ability to feel. When I was born, my father's house was burning down. I was yanked out of the womb, and I'm seeing it, and I can't talk, but I'm seeing it, and I'm knowing everything in detail. Would that be a lesser immune ratio for my body, or a toxic ratio, or the ultimate immunity at that moment for me to survive? My uncle was a surgeon, he was well trained, but mother couldn't nurse me even because the house was burning down, and they had to rush it out of the house to be pregnant, deliver the baby right there. And I came through it all, and the culture that I grew up in is when you're born, after the 24 hours, they take you and throw you in the river. If you float, they keep you. You don't come up, they let you go away because you ain't going to survive in the jungle. You may call that child abuse in this society, but in the jungle is child survival. Now, did it make me a weaker person? Did it make me a fearful person? Or did it make me a person willing to cope with the situation?
Willing to cope.
And that's what Jesus is talking about, but remember, I didn't come to this understanding overnight. I had to go through many painful situations to come to the understanding that the pain was the probe, the necessary ingredient, the little brick in your sock, inside of your shoe, the one flea to the dog. The dog is very healthy if he has one flea. He's sick if he has no fleas. You ever think of that? How many sick dogs are around with no fleas?
What I think I hear you saying is, regardless of how the house is burning down, the cultural situation of throwing the baby in the water, you know, regardless of how my daughter's father reacted, how passive I may have been, what the doctor did, the fact that my daughter got through it and survived and breathed, despite everybody else, or despite your fire, you know, like it was the survival time, and so that's what is going to be her building blocks, or what were your building blocks to come back on.
Now, if you look at the scope of the horror, that's the script she and I chose to act in the movie called Kriyaktayan. This Kriyaktayan is a movie. The big producer is sitting back called Brett Life. Director is called Pain, Frustration. Individuality is called Actor. But the Oscar for acting out the movie is non-decomposition within the carbon-based body and permanently take it wherever you want. Because all the qualities are there, regardless if you leave it for them to look at and it don't rot, or take it with you and they never know where the heck you're gone.
So
I would say your daughter has pulled her way through, regardless of how it may seem from the standpoint of the mechanism. These immune quantities are all in her favor.
So even if the chart, because going back, I've never had a chart done, but Ginger was saying, at least from her perspective, that people who are induced or come before their time or whatever have a more difficult time, she's still going to be immune to some of the stuff and be able to work through.
Don't focus on the idea that the difficultness of their life makes them less important or retarded or not functional. It's not valid because you're misreading and underrating what this mechanism can and could do and is designed to do. But you have to go through the process of exposing it to various forms of confrontation to get the highest result to come out. Now, think for one moment, carbon at one level is a charcoal. You know what kind of heat would take a carbon to be a charcoal? There's a certain temperature that will be charcoal. At another temperature, it's a graphite. At another temperature, it's a diamond. Which of the three conditions has the highest temperature? Yeah, see? Now, if you ask the charcoal, after it has been made, would you like to go to diamond? What would it say?
I got enough heat,
right? The same way with the graphite. Yeah, okay, that's exactly so. That's why your scriptures say, God only give you what you can handle. And all your needs are fulfilled. You never say your wants are fulfilled. I have never found in any biblical writing where a want is fulfilled. But I found where it says every need is fulfilled. Now a need is a very functional principle. How much it needs to be a charcoal, or how much it needs to be a graphite, and how much it needs to be a diamond, it will be exposed to. But wanting is surplus. Need is the moment of stress to act upon. So this is always there, and your nature and your health will match it every second within the need frame. But you won't match it in the want frame, because the want frame is surplus. And laws of physics operating in health within a mechanism doesn't have a surplus principle. It has a need principle within the time frame of its own immunity function. That's why there is no reserve health. There is health for the moment you breathe. There is immunity to the moment you breathe. There is transcendency of all limitations to the moment you breathe. But if you don't breathe, none of these things will ever work into manifestation. So breath is the criteria. The key is the requirement to the door of the car, to the ignition of the car, and then if you don't put gasoline, you can't even turn the car on. See? So that's the breath again. So regardless of how the environmental stresses are, when a fetus is working its way out into the reality of its existence, and the cord is cut, and it survived, I would say it has accomplished. Because it could be worse, never to have the chance to go through it. No matter how difficult the situation is, you going through it and functioning after you've gone through it is your asset, not a deficit. The other views of it may seem like a deficit. It is not. They are assets. To the man who lost his leg, it would seem a deficit. But then it was an asset when he developed the ability to do what? Cope with it and do other things. And some people have lost their arms, and it would seem like a deficit. And yet you see that man use his foot to write, to do work. Is that a deficit or an asset? No. And so some people, and hard-headed like me, choose the roughest roads to go through. So some of us are very hard-headed, you know. We don't believe till we go through it. And we got to mangle up ourselves to find out that creative consciousness can and does pick the worst situations to prove that it can do greater things. How can you do greater things if you don't have mangled up mechanisms to transcend? If you don't have painful situations to transcend, you can't do good.
I agree with that, because looking at relationships, if certain things happen that at that time were very painful emotionally to get through, which also affects one's health.
Yeah.
I might not be sitting in this room here and going and doing other things. And the accomplishments, things I've done since that time, the development might not have happened had I not gone through some of that pain emotionally.
I'd look at it this way, as Yogananda once said, each person's life or scope of the horror is an epitome to the divinity of God. God loves to exemplify himself within each individual by the level of their pain. Sounds very painful, right? But God finds great joy by exemplifying himself through the individual at the level of the pain that the individual is coping with. Whatever level of pain you choose to come through is in your horoscope. That is the individuality, and that's the creative principle working through you to exemplify itself. In other words, if God is health or life, is death a challenge to it? Then if it's not a challenge, why would death be there? Death is a challenge to life, and if life would succumb to death, then what, would we trust God? So if life does not succumb to death, and death succumbs to life, then we trust God. So therefore, if God couldn't design, this principle couldn't design the ultimate ways to challenge it and transcend it by the process of going through it, it wouldn't be valid. So no matter what we think could be totally destructive to us, the end result of destruction would be death. And if death is no challenge to creative life, we see that life is stronger than death. Then, for that reason, quit living to die and start living to live. Because living to die is no real threat to living to live.